ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 6, text number 57. Sakkalyastattutaha svamtu Panchada yasya samhitam Vaksya mangyala shaliya Kalya Sireshwadat
Kalya Sireshwadat
Sakalya
Sakalya
Tatsutaha
The son of Mandukaya
Swam
His own
Tu
And
Panchada
In five parts
Yasya
Dividing
Samitam,
the collection.
Vatsamudgala
Saliya,
to Vatsya,
Mudgala,
and Saliya.
Kokalya,
Sishireshu,
and to Kokalya
and Sishira.
Adat,
Cave. Just before I read today's translation, I'll just read the couple of preliminary verses starting from text 50. Srila Vyasadeva separated the mantras of the Rig, Atharva, Yajur and Samavedas into four divisions, just as one sorts out a mixed collection of jewels into piles. Thus he composed four distinct Vedic literatures. The most powerful and intelligent Vyasadeva called four of his disciples, a Brahmana, and entrusted to each of them one of these four samhitas. Srila Vyasadeva taught the first samhita, the Rig Veda, to Kaila, and gave this collection the name Vavricha. To the sage Vaisampayan, he spoke the collection of Yajna mantras named Nigida. He taught the Samaveda mantras designated as the Chandogya Samhita to Jomini, and he spoke the Atharva Veda to his dear disciple Sumantu. After dividing his Samhita in two parts, the wise Pala spoke it to Indra Pramiti. So we see that Srila Vyasadeva has divided the Veda, the one Veda, into four divisions. And now this verse is describing, plus today's verse, how then one of those four, namely Pala Rishi, who is in charge of the Rig Veda, further divides it among his disciples, who then further divide it like that. So the wise Pala spoke it to Indra Pramiti and Paskala. Bhaskara further divided his collection into four parts of Bhagava and instructed them to his disciples Bhajya, Yajnavalkya, Parasara and Agnivitra. Indra Pramiti, the self-controlled sage, taught his Samhita to the learned mystic Mandukaya, whose disciple Devamitra later passed down the divisions of the Rig Veda to Subhari and others. Today's verse, the son of Mandukaya, named Sakalya divided his own collection into five, entrusting one subdivision each to Vatsya, Mudgala, Shailya, Ungokalya, and Sishira. Text 58. Jatukanyascha tachishyaha asa niruktam svasamhitam abalaka paila jhavahala virajabhyodadomuni. The sage Jatukanya was also a disciple of Sukalya, and after dividing the Samhita he received from Sukalya into three parts, he added a fourth section, a Vedic glossary. He taught one of these parts to each of four disciples, Pallaka, the second Paila, Jabala and Viraj. Text 59. Baskali Pati Shakyabhyo Valaki Yakya Samvitam Chakrevayane Vajya Kasaras Chayavatam Daru. Baskali assembled the Valakirya Samhita, a collection from all the branches of the Rig Veda, and this collection was received by Valiyani, Vajya and Kasara. Purport, according to Srila Sridhara Swami, Valiyani, Vajya and Kasara belong to the Daitya community. Bhavricha Samitam Heta, this is text 60. Ebi Brahma Sibiriddha Sutvaita Chandasam Vyasam Sarvapapa Pramuchite. Thus, these various Samhitas of the Rig Veda were maintained through disciplic succession by these saintly Brahmanas, simply by hearing of this distribution of the Vedic hymns. One will be freed from all sins. So I'll leave it there, text 60. So here, Srimad Bhagavatam is describing the distribution of the Vedas. Of course, ultimately, by understanding these different branches of the Vedas, one comes to understand, of course, that the Vedas, although divided in many parts, actually come from the same source of knowledge, and therefore the conclusion of the Vedas must be one. These days, of course, many so-called scholars of the Vedas, many times people may quote something that we are doing this based upon this particular Vedic Shastra, but because they are unaware of the oneness of all Vedic literatures, which we will hear of course, because we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, they feel that perhaps there are many different teachings in the Vedas, and therefore, people, although they may profess to follow the Hindu culture, may think that, we follow this Vedic literature and you follow that one and yours is different to ours. But actually, the Vedas are in fact one teaching with one conclusion. And so here we're sort of working in reverse how they become broken up and entrusted to various sages. Ultimately, of course, the conclusion that we come to by Sudha Goswami is that he will present that he actually studied all the various Puranas, especially, and all these different branches of Vedic knowledge. In Kali Yuga, it's very difficult to study those branches of the Vedas. It's actually, you get more benefit in Kali Yuga by studying the Puranas, Narada, Pancharatra, Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata, like this, because people's intelligence is not so refined, and therefore the essential teachings is simplified and presented in story form, and it's much more palatable and easy to understand through the various Puranas. So Sri Goswami will, you know, gradually explain that, or you know, already he has explained in repeating the teachings of Srila Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami, that ultimately Sri Goswami has studied all of the Puranas, and that he considers that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important of all these, because it gives the ultimate conclusion of all the Vedas. And this. So, if one studies any Vedic literature, as we said, people may study a particular branch, but people should study also the Srimad Bhagavatam along with whatever particular branch that they may be learning, so that they get the one conclusion of the Vedas along with the particular area of you know, Vedic knowledge that they're interested in. So Srimad Bhagavatam is very important. Now as mentioned by Sukadeva Goswami, and Sri Goswami, actually the Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna himself, that he becomes fully manifest in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam has a position of status above all other, you know, Vedic literatures, in that Krishna himself personally appears in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, non different from Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, especially in this age, if people associate with Srimad Bhagavatam, they're actually associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they get immense benefit. So, as described here, that imperceptibly, even just hearing the few verses, you know, that we heard here about the distribution of the Vedic hymns, even this you know, this one section of the Rig Veda, that one becomes free from all sin, because it is one is directly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that if one chants the holy name of the Lord, which is not different from the Lord, one becomes free from all sinful reaction. If one comes before the deity of the Lord is personally present within the deity, one becomes free from all sinful reaction. If one takes up devotional service under the Lord's representative, the spiritual master, one also directly associates with the Supreme Lord through service, and in all these different ways one becomes free from sinful reaction. Later on it actually describes in the same section that you know, one who hears these descriptions becomes blessed with a spiritual potency. Of course, that spiritual potency means that one can understand very confidential spiritual matters and actually have the spiritual strength to practice those spiritual activities. So all these benefits are here just by hearing even this small section of Srimad Bhagavatam. What to speak of those who make a very serious study of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. You just only imagine the effect. What to speak of those who, after making a very very serious study of Srimad Bhagavatam, then dedicate their lives to preaching or teaching people about the Srimad Bhagavatam and helping people to gain an attraction. The benefit is so unlimited that practically it's indescribable. So that's you know, that's what's hinted at here, of course, that, you know, just read a few verses, it's so much benefit to destroy many lifetimes of karma. What to speak of one who's always absorbed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course that is the example of the life of the gopis. In fact, we see that actually when Krishna and Balaram were fighting with the wrestlers just before Krishna killed Kamsa, many of the people there in the audience, although they were a bit disturbed that such little boys had to fight with such big ferocious wrestlers, but at the same time they were appreciating that Krishna, with the little drops of perspiration on his forehead from fighting, looks so beautiful. Not like, you know, ordinary when someone is fighting they become a bit disheveled and, you know, roughed up, but actually the more, you know, Krishna was fighting, he became more and more beautiful. And even though these huge wrestlers, you know, who by one punch would kill someone, you know, they were beating Krishna and Balaram with their fists, and everyone could see that it was just like someone was throwing a flower at an elephant. There was just no effect, you know, on Krishna. And they could understand, well, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they'd also heard that, and they'd heard about different pastimes of Krishna, and, you know, it was said that so they were glorifying the residents of Vrindavan. They were saying that just imagine that, you know, how fortunate they are that they are always absorbed in Krishna. You know, whether they're cooking, whether they're working, whether they're in the fields, whether they're tending the cows, whether they're looking after their children, always absorbed in Krishna, in constant samadhi. So they're actually glorifying. And of course in the Bhagavad Gita it also confirms that Krishna himself says that one who is always absorbed in him, with great faith and love and devotion, his mind always fixed on Krishna, that person is the topmost yogi, the topmost transcendentalist, the greatest of all, you know, yogis. in this way, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost scripture, because it actually teaches one how to absorb oneself in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see that the essential teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that anyone who thinks of Krishna constantly, that person becomes completely liberated. That is the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam. Even if a person thinks of Krishna not out of pure devotional service, but even out of fear, such as Kamsa. Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna even in fear. He was thinking, you know, Kamsa will come, Krishna will come and he will kill me. That is a prophecy. So he was just always absorbed in Krishna. Ultimately, that absorption in Krishna, even in fear, allowed him to become liberated. it's described that the gopis thought of Krishna motivated by their lusty desires, or their, you know, feelings to, you know, very strong, passionate desires to be with Krishna. Of course, that lust of the gopis is actually pure love. In other words, their lusty desire was that let us be there to render pure devotional service to you. They're not thinking so much lusty desires for our sense gratification, but you know, whichever way that we see that even Sisipal was you know, always thinking of Krishna, and he was somewhat envious, and he also achieved liberation. So any way, somehow or another, if someone can think of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that means that the Supreme Lord is within one's mind and heart, and just by that it destroys the effect of the material energy, the covering in the material energy. So the gopis, of course, they demonstrated that absorption, and all of the Brajavasis, and amongst the Brajavasis or those in Vrindavan, amongst all the gopis, were the highest in always just being absorbed in Krishna, in a mood of pure devotional service. So in that Vrindavan mood, the Srimad Bhagavatam also reveals that Krishna demonstrated his activities in the spiritual world. Krishna's activities in the spiritual world is that he is enjoying transcendental pleasure pastimes with his own internal spiritual energy, pleasure potency, who is personified as Srimati Radharani, and who expands as many, many different gopis and goddesses of fortune, and all the residents of Vrindavan. They're all engaged in assisting Krishna to enjoy, along with his own spiritual pleasure potency, in the form of personified as Radharani and the gopis. Or in Dwarka, his spiritual pleasure potency is personified as Rukmini and the various queens of Dwarka, like this. So, one who always is able to absorb their consciousness, especially if they're doing that favorably, in assisting Krishna in his spiritual pastimes, that person becomes completely liberated and gradually revives their dormant love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and just by hearing them or absorbing oneself in those activities, gradually one progresses under the shelter of the spiritual energy, that one can actually enter the spiritual world and become absorbed into those pastimes. This is the when we say spiritual potency, that's the spiritual potency to actually go back to the spiritual world, to release oneself from the clutches of the material energy and go back to the spiritual world. That's the spiritual potency. One without spiritual potency, they're completely in the clutches of the material energy and they cannot free themselves even for a moment. Spiritual potency means that one is able to be completely aloof to the control of the material energy and be always under the influence of the spiritual energy. That means actually serving the Supreme Lord and his eternal associates in Krishna consciousness. That's the spiritual potency. Those pastimes, of course, Krishna with Srimati Radharani and the gopis of Vrindavan and the Brajavasis, a very, very elevated subject matter, so we won't talk about them. But actually, we begin to get an understanding of Krishna's activities with his internal spiritual pleasure potency personified as Sita Devi. So, in the previous cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, before we get to the 10th canto, where we discuss the pastimes of Krishna and his gopis and Srimad Radharani. Before that, we discuss the creation of the material world, so how Krishna is interacting with his material energy to manifest the material world under the being impelled by his various shaktis, which are there, energizing the spiritual energy. And we also learn about the Lord and his various lila incarnations, his various avatars. But in many of those pastimes with the avatars, there's not a lot of discussion about Krishna's activities with his pleasure potency, such until we really, especially in the ninth canto, you see that it's sort of introduced to a greater degree in the form of the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. And there of course we see that Krishna, who appears as Lord Ram, has very significant pastimes which are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam with his spiritual potency in the form of Sita Devi, because today is the appearance day of Sita Devi. Therefore we get the first understanding that the Lord's eternal consort are always engaged in his transcendental service for the Lord's transcendental pleasure, and that one who tries to disrupt that actually is acting under the influence of the material energy and is somewhat demoniac. And we see that mentality is personified in the form of Ravana. Ravana actually wanted to take Sita Devi, the Lord's own spiritual consort, and he wanted to enjoy her himself. Anyone who actually goes against the Supreme Personality of Godhead ultimately is annihilated. So we see that one who goes against the whole activities of the spiritual world, as we describe, the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us to join in with the Lord in his activities in the spiritual world, not to try and disrupt all the activities of the spiritual world. So the Lord is enjoying in the spiritual world with his own eternal consort, who is his spiritual energy. One should not think, yes, I will go to the spiritual world, I will make revolution, I will change everything, no more will the Lord be, engaging in these pastimes. I'm going to ruin everything for him and everyone. One should be thinking, yes, if I was so fortunate to return to the spiritual world, that even if I could take part in the Lord's pastimes, even as a speck of dust that they may trample upon, I would consider myself very, very fortunate on this. In the ninth canto, we see that there is an introduction to the concept that one should be very, very careful that even though the Lord's eternal consorts, one should always have a service attitude to the Lord and the Lord's eternal consort. So Ravana didn't have this, and he was annihilated. I'll just read that pastime from here. We see in the Ramayana there's a little description here of Sita back in the glossary. It says, Sita, the daughter of King Janaka, who became Ram's wife. How she was born on the earth is described in a Vedic literature known as the Devi Bhagavat as follows. There was once a great rishi called Kushadvaj, who had a daughter named Vedavati, who was said to be an incarnation of the goddess Lakshmi. Kushadvaj was petitioned by various celestials and demons for his daughter's hand, which she had set her mind on getting Vishnu as her husband. One day a demon named Shambhu asked for Vedavati's hand in marriage, but he was refused. Becoming furious, he attacked and killed Kushadvaj. When Vedavati saw this, she looked in anger at the demon, and he was immediately burnt to ashes. She then went to the forest and began to meditate in order to propitiate Vishnu and get him as her husband. It was at that time that Ravana came there and insulted her, and that's described in the beginning of the Ramayana. After she immolated her body, burnt herself in yogic trance, it is said that Ravana took her ashes with him back to Lanka. He kept them in a gold box in his palace. However, soon after this, he saw many inauspicious omens in Lanka. The rishi Narada, on a visit to Lanka, informed Ravana that the cause of the ill omens was the presence of Vedavati's ashes. The demon then had them thrown in the ocean. The box containing the ashes was carried by the ocean and deposited on the seashore near Mithila. It went into the earth, and it was at that place that Janaka performed a sacrifice for getting a child. A part of his sacrifice was the furrowing of the earth, and thus found the box. Lakshmi had entered the ashes, and when Janaka unearthed the box, he found a golden child inside. This child was named Sita. So that's a description of the birth. And we see also that, you know, in the very beginning of the Ramayana, we see here, the demon was unable to resist the charms of women. That's Ravana. As he gazed upon the alluring form of the girl, he was possessed by increasing desire. He laughed and waited for her reply. The girl fully opened her black eyes and looked at Ravana. Seeing him as a guest in her hermitage, she spoke respectfully, telling him her name. She was Vedavati, the daughter of a powerful sage, who was himself a son of the god's preceptor, Brihaspati. Looking down in shyness, she said, "I was born as an incarnation of the holy Vedas." My father was sought by numerous gods and other celestial beings who wished to have my hand in marriage. However, none but Vishnu, the Lord of all the worlds, can be my spouse. Thus I am seated here, absorbed in thought of the Lord and awaiting his favour. Vedavati had meditated for thousands of years. Her body, like that of the gods, neither aged nor required any sustenance. She could understand by her own inner vision who Ravana was and what was his intention. In gentle tones, she said that only Vishnu could be her husband. That inconceivable Lord was all-powerful and all-seeing, and she had chosen him alone. She could not belong to anyone else. Ravana should continue on his way as before. Ravana laughed again. He was not going to leave behind this jewel of a woman. Hearing the name of Vishnu, his sworn enemy, only made him all the more determined. The demon's voice boomed like thunder. "Your resolution to practice austerity befits only old women, O lady of shapely limbs. Why do you waste your fleeting youth in this way? I am Ravana, lord of the Rakshasas, the very mighty race of demons. Become my wife and live with me in my capital Lanka, the golden city I forcibly seized from the gods. Who is this Vishnu anyway?" Ravana spoke derisively of Vishnu, whom he knew to be the lord of all the gods. The arrogant demon cared nothing for any universal authority. He had been granted boons by Brahma, the creator of the universe, who had so blessed the Rakshasa that he could not be killed by practically any created being, neither god nor demon. Ravana could assume forms at will. Vedavati's mention of Vishnu did not bother him in the least. He stood smiling before the maiden, his eyes full of lust. Hearing Ravana deride Vishnu, Vedavati flared up with anger and rebuked the demon. She told him to leave immediately for his own good, lest he incite the powerful anger of that supreme deity. Ravana smiled. This high-spirited woman would make a perfect consort for him. He obviously liked him a little feisty. He stepped forward and grabbed hold of her long locks. Vedavati at once uttered a powerful Sanskrit mantra which momentarily checked the demon's advance. She lifted a hand and by her mystic power cut through her hair. The Rakshasa fell back in surprise as she spoke furiously. "O evil one, I shall now quit this body, defiled by your touch. As I have been insulted by you, I shall take birth again only for your destruction. Appearing from the earth, I shall become the pious daughter of a virtuous man. You and your entire race will be destroyed as a result of that birth." Vedavati closed her eyes and meditated on Vishnu, seeing him within her heart. Before Ravana's eyes, she invoked the fire from within herself. Her body was immediately consumed by flames, and in a few moments Ravana stood looking at her ashes. Baffled by her words, the disappointed demon rose again to his chariot and continued on his way. So we see that one who, rather than assisting the Lord in his pastimes, but actually becomes a competitor against the Lord, is actually destroyed by the very energy of the Lord, because usually not so fortunate as to be come into contact with the Lord's spiritual potency in the form of Sita Devi. But usually the expansion of Mahalakshmi in the form of Mahamaya, or the personified material energy, usually the demons are just destroyed by their own sinful activities through the actions of the material energy, who is an expansion ultimately from. So ultimately, you know, by the Lord's energy, the demons or those who go against the plan of the Lord are actually destroyed. Sita Devi, of course, is so we hear in the ninth canto a little bit about the Lord's interaction, getting a stern warning, which helps us that when we begin to hear about Krishna's activities in the 10th canto, that we understand how careful we must be to, you know, have a service and purified mentality while, you know, reading those pastimes, and, you know, our desires to interact with the Lord, you know, in a proper way as a servant of the Lord and his associates. We also get some instruction. We see how ultimately Srimati Radharani, she expands in various ways as the queens of Dwarka, such as Rukmini and as Sita Devi. These are all actually expanding from Srimati Radharani and as Lakshmi Devi. And that same personality appeared in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes as I think it was Lakshmi Priya, so Vishnu Priya. You know, the Lord's Mahalakshmi, who had previously appeared as Sita, and Rukmini appeared as Vishnu Priya in the Lord's pastimes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see that today also, of course, is the appearance of Janavi Mata. But Janavi Mata was the consort of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is the form of Lord Balaram. They're non-different personalities. In Krishna Leela, he's Balaram. In Chaitanya Leela, here is Nityananda. Balaram's two wives, Vasudha and Varuni, appeared in Gaura Leela as Janavi, and Lord Balaram's wives, Ravati and Varuni, appeared as Janavi and Vasudha in Gaura Leela. And it's also described that Anangamanjari, the younger sister of Srimati Radharani, also that Janavi and Vasudha are both considered to be her expansions as well. So they in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Srimati Radharani appeared, as we say, Lord Balaram's wives appeared, and Janavi Devi appearance day today. Srimati Radharani's eight principal associates appeared. Radharani's eight principal associates have eight principal servant gopis, and they all appeared. And so those 64, then they all appeared in male forms though, because in Kali Yuga, people are, you know, so lusty and you know, demoniac, that the Lord in his Chaitanya Leela, he didn't really display especially his conjugal love. You won't really find that if you go through, you know, even though he was married with Vishnupriya, who's none other than Lakshmi, you know, his association with his wife was, you know, there's not a lot written about it, and he very rarely joked with her. There's very hardly any real conjugal pastimes. You can go through all the parts, very little, because you know, in you know, go back a couple of million years, it was one Ravana. Everyone else, you know, would respect Lakshmi, someone who is known to be an incarnation of Lakshmi. Here, everyone is in the Ravana mentality, you know, in Kali Yuga. Everyone is a little Ravana. Ravana mentality without any powers. And you know, the gopis the eight principal gopis, Radharani, their various gopi assistants, they appeared as 64 mahants, they call them there, like, but all as in male forms, or, you know, great associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Many of them were especially coming in the line of disciples or association with Gadadhar Pandit, who's an incarnation also of the internal pleasure potency of the Lord. In that Leela, rather than manifesting you know, the pastimes of the spiritual world, especially conjugal love with the Supreme Lord, they actually preach the Srimad Bhagavatam as their main activity. They preach the holy name of the Lord, and they taught the precepts of the Bhagavatam to show that you know, it is such an important service, you know, especially in Kali Yuga. If people can somehow or another, just like Srila Prabhupada says, books are the basis. The basis of the success of ISKCON, the basis of Srila Prabhupada's whole, his major focus, his major instruction to his disciples was to distribute books. The major instruction of his spiritual master to Srila Prabhupada himself was to go to the West and distribute books, and write books and publish books and distribute them, you know, especially in the English country. So this is and that service was engaged in when the residents of the spiritual world came down in Chaitanya Leela. That was their activities, those same activities. As we were saying here, you can imagine that just by hearing a few verses, you become free from sinful reaction. But you can only imagine the fortune that one who, you know, takes up the service to try and help people to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, first the Bhagavad Gita, and, you know, gradually the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam very, very scientifically through the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then took the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, and again, just as these sages are doing, you take portion, just as Vyasadeva did. He took portions here, you know, these jewels that were very similar, and these jewels, and he collected them up and then distributed them amongst various disciples. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually did the same thing, that he took the various jewels of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and, you know, so the science of rasa, you know, what are the different relationships you can have with the Supreme Lord. You know, those jewels he collected up, and we see that in the later portions of the Nectar Devotion. The science of bhakti, how one can become a devotee from the very beginning and develop all the way up to Prema Bhakti. He took those jewels and presented them. The science of bhava and ecstasy and all these different things, prema, all these different jewels, he collected them collectively and put them, and they were put in the various teachings of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So actually Janavamata, she resided in Bengal. So after Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left this world, Janavamata became one of the prime spiritual forces or gurus or instructors for all the Vaishnavas. Sometimes she would go to Vrindavan. And when she was in Vrindavan, she instructed some of the Goswamis, I think it was Jiva Goswami, that in Vrindavan they have these jewels of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is the science of Srimad Bhagavatam, and that she wanted them distributed all over India, because although there were Vaishnavas, many Vaishnavas who would embrace Vaishnavism in Bengal and Orissa like that, she understood that they didn't have the philosophical grounding that they had in Vrindavan due to the the teachings of the Goswamis, and therefore she wanted that literature of the Goswamis distributed all over India. Actually there's some interesting stories about Janavamata. Now we were talking about the 64 Mahants. So one of those Mahants is actually Madhu Pandit, who's Madhu Pandit is because it's his disappearance day today. So we've covered them all in the one story. But Madhu Pandit, he established the temple of Gopinath. Gopinath appeared, first manifested to his spiritual master, and even before that, actually, the Gopinath deity was actually installed in Vrindavan by Krishna's great grandson, Vajranatha. But later again, became manifest, sort of lost it on top. So, one time, Janavamata, there's a story by Hayagriva in, I think it's called Vrindavan Days, Memoirs of Vrindavan Days. He tells a story when they were in the Gopinath temple that Achyutananda Swami was telling them this pastime. That one time when Janavamata was in the Gopinath temple, all the devotees there, and there's kirtan, what have you, and the Gopinath deity jumped off the altar, grabbed Janavamata, took her into the deity room and closed the curtains. And then later, when the devotees opened the curtains, that she was gone and Gopinath deity was back on the altar. When Janavamata, she of course went back to Bengal, and Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda Prabhu and Narottam Das Thakur were trained up in the literatures of the Goswamis, which describe the science of Srimad Bhagavatam. And before setting off on their journey, they went to get the blessings of the various Mahants and great Vaishnavas. And Madhu Pandit gave Srinivasacharya a garland from the deity of Gopinath as a blessing to empower him to go and distribute the books of and distribute the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. And that actually same tradition. So therefore, whenever we get the garland, you sit on the asana and you get the garland. That potency of Madhu Pandit is still there. It comes from from Srila Prabhupada, and you can follow all the way back to the Acharyas, all the way back to Madhu Pandit, all the way back to Gopinath, the deity, and the blessings of Janavamata. All that potency comes through. You get your little garden at the beginning of the class. That's the same blessings are there today. in fact, that anyone who, you know, if you try to study, learn, teach, distribute the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is all of the acharyas and the Supreme Lord himself, the Supreme Lord's consorts, you know, they give their full blessing. Therefore we see that Srila Prabhupada, he was given the order, you go to the West and distribute books, and everyone can see that. How did it happen? That he was, you know, empowered by the Supreme Lord, by all the residents of Vrindavan, by the Lord's spiritual potency. He did something which was just an absolutely beyond material, it defies everything we know in material life for Srila Prabhupada to do what he did. And the only explanation that we can understand is that if one takes that instruction to, distribute the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this age of Kali, that one will be, get that spiritual potency, that one's own spiritual life will flourish and have the ability to help people in their own spiritual life. That's very, very important. Therefore, today, of course, we're reading this verse, gives us a little hint, and through the lives of the Supreme Lord's spiritual consort and her associates, who all appeared in Chaitanya Leela to preach Srimad Bhagavatam, we should understand that that's where our good fortune lies in hearing, even just if we can just hear. Imagine how unfortunate someone is. If someone will go through their whole life and never even hear one verse of the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are people in this world who will do that. And then you can imagine our good fortune that every day, we have that opportunity to basically just at an arm's reach, we can just any time, just reach across all these Bhagavatam like that. And become just touching the book. I know with my mother that she never reads any of our literature. Never reads anything. But she always has a Krishna book in her home. And sometimes I go there and I see, there's a Krishna book, and I think, I've got to give that to someone. And I grab the Krishna book and I distribute it. And then, when I'm there again, she says, "Where's my Krishna book?" Because she must have a book. She knows I must have that book in the house. She never reads it, but she must have it in the house, and she knows that's the path of, perfection. So, I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments,
I have a very good question. First of all, you gave a wonderful description. I understand that Sita Devi is an extension of Radha and Sita Devi, because some of you are Mahavishnu.
Yes. All of the consorts of the Lord are expansions of the Lord's internal pleasure potency, of who the topmost manifestation manifests as Srimati Radharani. So, principally three different types. Radharani, principally her expansions in three different types. The gopis, the queens of Dwarka, and the Lakshmis. Mahalakshmi, Rukmini expands as Mahalakshmi, and Sita Devi, all the various consorts of Lord Narayan, all the consorts of the Leela avatars, the Purusha avatars, they are all ultimately expanding from Srimati Radharani. Any other questions?
So,
Gopinath.
Gopinath.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. Anyone know about that? Is the deity of Gopinath the same? Yeah, I'm not sure. I was thinking that there may be some connection when I was actually reading this, but I didn't have time to research it. But I'll look into it. Yeah, it's possible. I was thinking the same thing that I may have. You know, read some description there.
What I understand, Madhavan Prabhu Didi, Madhavan Didi is near Udaipur, Srinath.
Yes, well, this Gopinath also was moved to Jaipur. Sometimes what happens is the original deities are moved to Jaipur, sometimes they have a replica form in Vrindavan because of the various invasions.
The name of the deity that Madhavendra found, is the name Gopal mentioned?
Yeah, I think there's a Gopal deity connected with Madhavendra.
It is not now as Srinathji or Sri Govardhan Thari Ji in Udaipur?
Yeah.
So it was Gopal, not Gopinath.
Yeah,
it's not
Gopinath.
Yeah. Name is
very
beautiful. So where is that one? Madhavendra Puri's
Udaipur.
Jaipur.
Yeah, that
Jaipur. One more comment about in Ramayana, it is a story about Jayadeva was the person who hit Srimati Sita Devi. He took some flesh out from the feet of Sita Devi. So he was, he went to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, everybody, and nobody could save him. So he became a crow, And then everybody sent him to go to Lord Rama. So when he went to Lord Rama thought that we must give some punishment. So he just put an arrow in his eye. So to tell him that, look, Sita and Ram, there is no difference. You have to see as one. No difference.
Okay. Yeah.
You might have heard this Jain story. You heard something Jain?
I've heard little bits and pieces of that story. It was nice to hear the whole thing.
There was exemplary punishment by Lord Rama. Although he was very,
Yeah, so the idea, of course, is that gradually we have to come to the understanding through the Srimad Bhagavatam that all of the energies of the Lord are meant for the Lord's, to be engaged in the Lord's service. The material energy is meant to be engaged in the Lord's service. The spiritual energy is meant to be engaged in the Lord's service. And if we, you know, that's the change of heart that the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us. That we no longer become a competitor trying to enjoy the property of the Lord, but we actually become a servant engaging the Lord's property in His service. That's the liberated position. And if we don't come to that platform, then, you know, we're in a very dangerous situation. It means that, you know, we will suffer, you know, serious consequences. And the stories of Rama comes to show that even if one is so powerful that practically no god or demon or demigod can, you know, harm that person, is so powerful, still, if they create offence to the Lord, and especially to His devotees who are, you know, serving the Lord and serving you know, the Lord's spiritual energy, one will be vanquished completely by those activities, and everything one has will be completely lost. Whereas, you know, if one goes the other way and just has the slightest little activity in a favourable way, even just reading one verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam means you're going in the right direction. The path of auspiciousness is just fully open. That's it.
And you say that in this month's Jagrat, May, June, it is mentioned that Sharanagati in British Columbia is a place, you might know Sharanagati.
Yeah.
And one article has come, how we have to serve Mother Earth and all the ingredients, whatever we grow, must be served for Krishna's most important.
Yeah, very nice. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.